Good afternoon. This program is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we appreciate you joining us today. Coming up, I'm going to be talking with David Commande, who is music director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra in Peoria. They open their fifth season tomorrow night at Five Points Washington, just outside Peoria, and we'll talk about their mostly Mozart program. First, though, I will be talking with three members of the Austin, Texas-based Latin-flavored band Del Castillo, who are performing actually in about an hour at the El Nora Guitar Festival at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Here is a tune of theirs. That's a band called Del Castillo, and off of a no album yet. This is some music that hasn't been released on any kind of recording, so it's probably the first time you're going to get a chance to hear it, which is kind of nice here on Live and Local. We get to do those things every once in a while, and I'm Kevin Kelly, host of the show. We're your connection to local performances. Last week and this week and various parts of the show, we've been focusing on El Nora, the guitar festival, which opened last night at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana, continues today and then more tomorrow, and Del Castillo will actually be playing in a matter of an hour from now at 5 o'clock. It's a free show. Donations welcome, of course, on stage 5, which is to say one of the lobby stages. And some of you might remember that they were in our area a couple of years ago. They played at the Research Park on the University of Illinois campus. Outside at the Research Park is the name of the series. And I got to talk to some of the guys then, and we have three of them with us on the program today. One of the co-founders, Mark Del Castillo. He founded the group along with his brother, Rick. Also, Albert Bestero, who is the bass player of the group. I should say Mark is one of the guitarists. And we have the rookie, who is Danny Ortiz, lead vocalist and, as he said, all sort of auxiliary percussionist. Thank you all very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Pleasure to see you again, although none of us could remember who was here before, so I may or may not have seen you again other than the pictures on your website. This tune called Sabemos means what?
We know. When my brother Rick wrote it and showed it to us, and it was a pretty catchy upbeat tune, and we all enjoyed it, and it's just a great song that live. People like the energy, and we enjoy playing it, so hopefully everybody will latch on.
The name means anything in particular?
Well, it's just a message of love and peace and harmony, and we know that's what we want to achieve, and the message is we know that's what we want to give, that we're trying to wake people up to. I know my brother was trying, his message was trying to wake people up to being more understanding and unified and loving, you know, and this is within us and we should know it, that kind of vibe.
Is Del Castillo a message band?
A lot of our songs have a lot of passionate lyrics and they come out that way, whether we want it to or not. And
not intentional. I wouldn't say intentionally a message band, but we're pretty upbeat, positive people. We've been friends for many years. And so, you know, when you have that kind of friendship and love and that type of environment, the songs that you create usually reflect that.
When we get into the writing process, you know, we tend to write about things that make us feel great. You know, I've never written a depressing song, you know, and I just don't feel this. The music we play doesn't lend to it. We tend to write uplifting music, and we try to inspire people, whether through music or through the lyrics. But it's always upbeat and uplifting, you know. So if there's a message in there, you know, sometimes there is, you can, but it's not, it's in the past, it's never been about sending a message. It's always just been from our heart, you know, what we feel.
You and your brother both born in Brownsville?
Yes, sir.
I don't know how close you are.
He's 8 years older than me.
Oh, so you're the baby.
But don't say that on air.
No, we just did. Too bad. And so did you start in Brownsville? I know you're based in Austin, Texas now, but...
No, actually, my brother and I had never played together for... He grew up, like I said, he's 8 years older than I was, so he started playing much earlier than I did, and he actually was in a band with Albert back in the early days.
Obviously, I'm 8 years older than Mark as well, but Rick and I back in high school, like sophomore year, started a band, and we were in a band back then. So we've been playing that long, and Mark was Rick's little brother, who I think after Rick left...
I still am his little brother.
Yes. So after Rick left, you know, after high school, he went to go tour, and Mark started playing guitar, and, you know, we kind of heard about him, and then they hooked up back in Austin, and you know, then Mark was a contender by then. It had been
a long, long time. You know, I kind of forged my own path, and he forged, obviously, his before me, and we had our own band separately. And then he went to Seattle and had a band up there for a while. He moved there. And I went to Austin, and then he moved to Austin. And we were still kind of roommates, but we never had a band together. So we were always around each other. We had separate bands, separate music. And he was getting into production in his studio. And it just came about, like, on a Christmas. We just said, hey, let's. Oh, I remember what it was. I had started writing Spanish music with our old singer, and I showed him to Rick, and he's like, "Hey, I'm writing a couple of songs like this with this other friend of mine, and why don't we do something for Mom and Dad? You know, because our mom and dad didn't ever come to any shows. They were much older, and they just didn't appeal to the rock or the blues vibes. You know, they were much more into, you know, this kind of music. And so we're like, let's make a CD for Mom and Dad. They've, you know, been great, and let's do something for them for Christmas. And so that's how this whole thing started. It was not any intention to become, you know, famous or anything like that, or do anything more than, hey, here, Mom and Dad, here's a CD for you. So we started at, that was the impetus for this project. And then so it became like, hey, let's get our friends. Hey, Bert, you want to play bass? You know, hey, you know, Mike was the drummer in one of the bands that I was in. And hey, Mike, you want to play drums on this CD? And sure. So it was nothing like, hey, we're going to search out this drummer and search out, do auditions. It was just like, hey, you guys come in and let's have fun with this. And it just, you know, Rick was giving lessons, teaching guitar lessons. And one of his students was a chief attorney at some law firm, a CEO. And he's like, I want you to play at my party. And we're like, whoa.
This was after you'd made the record.
He was showing him when he would come in for lessons. He's like, hey, check out this CD my brother and I are doing. And he's like, oh, I love this. And he goes, I want you to play at my corporate party. And we're like, we don't have a band. You know. So
I can interject, I was Rick's roommate at the time, and I played guitar. So Rick and I had played guitar. And so they said, I used to play in this band that this bass player played a certain way. And Rick said, you know what? Can you play a song the way Freddie would play bass? And so that's how I kind of got in the band. And Paul, our friend Paul, who wanted to have this party, said, I want you all to play. Well, we're not a band. Well, we need to get a band together. And so that's how...
We basically got most of the guys that were on the CD to be in the band. And we had to start rehearsing. We, you know, and it's funny because, you know, when we started it, like, there was a lot of technical guitar playing on the CD, you know, on the first couple of tracks that we recorded, because I told my brother, I was like, I'm gonna write some crazy guitar solo, you know, something crazy for me, you know, I'm gonna push myself to write something a little difficult for me, because I didn't think I was ever gonna have to recreate it, you know. So I went home and practiced and metronomed this solos and got them down and went in and knocked them out, and I was like, yes, I'm done. And then it came time where if we have to recreate this at a party, I was like, oh my god. So it forced us, I got back into the love of practicing again, you know, because we had been in bands when just kind of doing our thing, but it really forced us to fall in love with the instruments again.
Like, I had to buy a bass because I wasn't a bass player, you know? So it was funny how it all started and you know, kind of through circumstance and very fortunate that happened.
So this was the family CD was the one called Brothers of the Castle.
Right.
Correct.
And
right.
Del Castillo means of the castle, your brothers,
right.
et cetera.
Exactly.
And you've got one, I think, called Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did that have with it, you know, the double meaning that you would get from that?
Well, it was just more so, you know, that we always feel like we're a brotherhood in this band. You know, everybody that's in this band, we feel like we're brothers. And that's what the whole idea of the title was. You know, we're more so, like on our website, we call ourselves a family of musicians. We're not really a band. We're like a family of musicians, in my opinion, or like brothers.
The band has quite a mix of stylistic influences from the tune we heard to start the show. To me, it would be more of the Latin style. The one we're about to hear has a little more, what would you say, rock and blues in it. And you got some flamenco sort of things going on at times. Did everybody bring a different style, as it were, to the band, or at least many different styles individually?
I think so. I was watching this documentary, and it had Wynton Marsalis, and he was talking about jazz musicians, and he says every jazz musician has an agenda, and jazz music is a negotiation of those agendas. And that kind of paralleled what we were doing, because Mark is a real big guitar nerd. You know, he loves all the guitar players. And Mike is a very Latin rhythmic player. Rick is very into production. I'm a rhythm and blues, reggae, alternative music kind of guy. And so everybody has their different fortes or their different types of music that they like. And when we create a song, it's like, okay, well, let's bring all these elements in together. And, you know, you throw your guitar nerd spice into the soup, and I'll throw the reggae spice into the soup, and you know, whoever will throw their other spice. And that's how the song kind of gets developed. It's I guess the negotiation of agendas would be a good way to put it.
And I realized that I actually gave the wrong title of the first tune we opened with. I said Sabemos, but it wasn't actually.
It was
played Tony Montuno.
Right, Las Seis Cuerdas said Tony Montuno.
Yeah, my notes are all wrong. I mean, my notes are right, and I just, yeah, so.
Don't feel bad, my notes are wrong sometimes,
that's
too.
Great. Well, so ignore what we said about, we're going to hear the tune that actually is called Sabemos.
Okay.
Sort of, kind of the brotherhood tune. At least as described early, and let's listen to what sort of soup was concocted by from the various influences. I'm talking with three members of the band. Well, really, we've just been talking to two so far. We're going to get the third involved in a few minutes.
Don't worry about that.
Band Del Castillo.
You guys are doing a great job.
Del Castillo from Austin, Texas. They're playing in about 45 minutes at the Krannert Center, part of the Elnora Guitar Festival. So. Well, let's hear the mix in Sabemos, Del Castillo, on Live and Local. Well, if you didn't know the name of the song, you do now. Sabemos, We Know, roughly, performed by Del Castillo on Live and Local. They're a band out of Austin, Texas, and they're in Urbana for a performance at Elnora, the guitar festival at the Krannert Center. In fact, they'll be playing in about, I guess, half an hour from now. And in the lobby, the festival started last night. It's been going all day long. It's going to go yet tomorrow. And a staggering variety of guitarists and music who that's going to be on there. You have a sample of some of what Del Castillo plays. And this lead singer for that tune was a fellow named Danny Ortiz, who is I think I said earlier, the rookie?
Rookie of the band. Yeah.
Which means what? How long?
Been with the guys for about doing the lead vocal parts for about a good 4 months now. I think we're looking at about 4 months.
A good four months. So
yeah, good 4 months doing all the shows.
Very rookie.
And very rookie, yeah, very green.
He's just coming out of preseason.
Yeah.
Do you have a probation period where, you know, you have to pass, as far as you know?
Yeah, actually, we were doing for what we did about maybe 6 months worth of filling in and doing some shows with the guys every once in a while.
Before that, he was playing. He was filling in for us like from starting last year October until like June. He would be filling in, and we had different singers coming in and doing different shows. So everybody really liked Danny. You know, I mean, we liked the other guys as well, but Danny seemed to fit the bill the best. And so that's.
Thank you, Mark.
How did you? What do you? What we were talking earlier about what musical styles people bring to the mix. What's your background?
Well, my background, growing up in the '80s and early '90s, I was all into the, you know, rock and roll, straight ahead rock and roll, heavy rock. Your Iron Maiden, your Journeys, your Queensryches, and the good rock tunes like that. And then that was my influence. And of course, being in the South Texas area from Brownsville, you know, we're around all the Latin music, the accordion music, Tejano, and all that Latin stuff. So, I think it was a good mix growing up.
How did you find these guys?
I know Mark. I know Mark because Mark had a rock band back in the day, a cover band with my brother. My brother was a bass player for a band by the name of Kickstart, and I was Mark's roadie.
I've known Danny for a long time.
I was about 14 years old, 15.
Oh my gosh.
You know, going into bars, going into clubs, hanging out with the big boys and girls.
I remember him walking by at rehearsal and just like singing some crazy stuff while he's just walking past. Wah, wah, wah. I was like, whoa, who's this guy? He can sing. That guy can sing. And that was a long time ago. And now we got him doing that on stage.
You all have all the songs I've heard, at least I can remember of yours, they're all in Spanish, or are there exceptions?
No, we have a lot of songs in English and Spanish. The first two albums were pretty much strictly in Spanish, but then we started incorporating more English into lyrics and became Spanglish, like half English, half Spanish songs, and yeah.
We're originally from the border area, Brownsville, Texas, which is right on the Mexican border. So we grew up in an environment where bilingualism was the common. It was common for us to speak both in English and Spanish without batting an eye, so to speak. So when the band initially started, most of the songs were in Spanish, some were in English. And when we write the songs, whatever fits the mood, really.
Yeah, and I think
and
nowadays...
So it's not a conscious effort to say, well, we're going to do this one in Spanish, we're going to do this one in English. Somebody comes up with a riff or a part, and then who's ever writing the lyrics or something will say, well, you know, I think this sounds better in Spanish, and they'll present it, and everybody will agree.
Yeah, people have conversations back home in both languages, just going back and forth with no problem, and people start calling it Spanglish. So, you know, like we are the type of music that we do, English, Spanish... We're a Spanglish kind of a band, so.
Do each of you also come, you know, the background from a different country, or are they, or where's everybody derived from?
Everybody grew up pretty much in the valley.
Really, in the valley, man.
And well, what I mean is, you know, your families.
Oh.
I mean, we grew up on the Mexican border, so you can't ignore the Mexican influence, and most of us have that blood in us, but there's also. You know, my last name is Bastedo. It's a Portuguese last name, but I consider myself Mexican-American. Majority of my family is, as most of us are.
But. Yeah, my dad was a Brownsvillian, and born and raised, and my mom's from Mexico. So, you know,
I guess what I was getting at is if, you know, whether, however far back, whether it was your parents or your parents' parents, mm-hmm. if the country, the music of the countries of origin could be identified.
Well, I mean, Spain and Mexico, I think, yeah. are pretty identifiable in the Del Castillo sound. Mexico geographically, and that's where we grew up. And of course, the Spanish guitar influence that Mark and Rick have are definitely could be, you know, those guitars are traced to Spain. And I think their playing is very unique because they come from that rock and in Mark's case, a more metal background. And then you put the classical guitar in their hands and it becomes something completely different. You know, their approach is, is different than most guitar players who play that specific type of guitar.
And you generally play acoustic guitars?
I've been playing pretty much ever since this band started. I haven't really played electric in, like, seriously in a band since this band started, like, 13 years ago. You know, and it makes me laugh because, you know, I've had people, you know, hand me an electric guitar. Hey, can you play this? And I was like, yes, I can play that. I mean, I've played electric, but they've only seen me play acoustics. But it's funny because I my whole mentality now has been acoustics, you know. It's just what we do. And that's what has made us who we are. So people ask us, hey, why don't you guys do a song on electric guitars on the album? And we've had producers say, that's not going to make you different. You know, what you do on acoustic is what makes you different from the pack, from the people, from other bands and other artists. And that's, you know, that's really true because, like Albert said, it's harder to play a nylon guitar the way I'm trying to play it. I'm trying to play a nylon like an electric. And you can't bend strings like an electric. You can't sustain notes as easily like an electric. So there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of trade-off you have to do in figuring stuff out and exploration and inspiration that starts coming out of the guitar, you know, trying to find different ways to play something that you would play easily on electric, trying to make it sound the same on an acoustic. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
And I think when you play like that, that really identifies Del Castillo. You hear him on the radio, you know, that's Del Castillo.
So I wish we had a little more time, but I know we got to run you over to the Krannert Center so you can play in a very short period of time. And that's going to be at 5 o'clock, Del Castillo at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, free program. In stage 5 in the lobby. Some of the things at El Nora Guitar Festival are free. Some there's a ticket and you can sort of hop around and catch what you can. Here's another tune, again, not yet released by Del Castillo. And I lost my piece of paper. Oh, called Medianoche.
And before we do that, in compliance with FCC mandate and much to the pleasure of the feds in Washington, I'd like to let you know that you're listening to WILL 90.9 Champaign-Urbana.
Thank you very much, and that prompts me to say that your program today, our program is supported by, you want to read this? No, that's okay. The Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring the new exhibit, The James Bond Theme, Music to Live, Die, and Love Another Day. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. This is Live and Local.
Papi. En la medianoche, se pone buena la cosa. Bailo con Juanita y después con Rosa. En la medianoche se pone buena la onda. Se pone buena. Búscame en la media, ahí vivo yo. Rompemos la pista con Rita, Juanita, Lupita, Conchita. Bailamos tú y yo.
Del Castillo, the tune Medianoche from a forthcoming release. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can take WILL with you wherever you go. If you have an iPhone, iPad, or Android device, the new WILL app is free and allows you to stream our AM and FM stations, listen to past episodes of your favorite programs on demand, and much more. For more information about how to find the WILL radio app in the App Store or Google Play, visit our website at will.illinois.edu. Our program today is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. For over 25 years, 10,000 Villages has provided income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. My next guest on Live and Local is David Commande, who is music director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra. Based in Peoria, they perform generally in Washington, Illinois, at the facility known as Five Points Washington. And they're about to start their fifth season tomorrow night with a concert at 7:30. They're calling it Very Mozart, two pieces by Mozart and one by Ottorino Respighi. And David's on the line with us now. Thanks for joining us on the show, as always.
Always glad to visit with you, Kevin.
Fifth season, that's a pretty good milestone.
Fifth season feels that somehow the evenness of the number feels great. And the little the V motif in our title is kind of a celebration of that five. V for Victor. We're concluding with, by the way, with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. We're doing a Beethovenian thing in our last concert of the season with both the fourth and the fifth seasons. Fifth Symphony.
And so is the V also the very Mozart thing?
Yes, yeah. Very Mozart. And next month we have Viva Viola.
I have to confess, I didn't catch that little subtlety as I was looking at the programs. What do you imagine that, or what do you intend that this year, fifth season, might show as some of the progress of the Heartland Festival Orchestra, things that might be different, things that might continue what has gone on before?
Well, I will say that, like a lot of human undertakings that are institutional, the orchestra and everyone that's part of what the Heartland Festival Orchestra is has just grown into its own very fine culture. We started out with wonderful and wonderfully talented musicians who would come together with a very small amount of rehearsal and put together marvelous performances, and that of course has continued, but it feels as if it goes ever more smoothly and that it reaches ever finer levels in about the same amount of time. We are fundamentally a chamber orchestra. There are occasional performances where we expand a bit in size, but this first opening this season, for example, this is very much the core of what a chamber orchestra is about, as you well know, Kevin. So we're going at it and doing so ever better, I think. The great thing is that subscriptions have risen still again for this year. So we're ahead of last year already, and we have been very fortunate to balance our books all four seasons so far, and it's a rising demand, I suppose. So we're delighted by that, very happy. And we'll continue doing what we do. Now, last year we did introduce a sixth program, which featured a special appearance by Doc Severinsen, and that was a little in the direction of the light classical. Obviously, that was jazzy, in the pops direction. And there is a demand for that. So when we have special attractions like that from time to time, we will be adding that to our core basic five programs.
So that was that was the extra last year.
That was the extra, yes.
And the sort of visual concept of the orchestra remaining the same. You're a little bit more casual than average, the average classical orchestra.
Yeah, you won't see as much black and white. We wear black and color, and the spirit is fairly light. And we're fortunate in 5 points because the concert-going experience it feels close acoustically and visually. So it's not nearly so distant an experience as some people have in various larger halls. So it's up close and personal. It's informal. I will and do talk from the stage sometimes to give people a kind of a handhold on what's about to happen. And we continue with our live video projection above and behind my head. That offers a closer view at any one moment, either to musicians within the orchestra or the soloist, or every once in a while, the other side of me.
Does that happen at every concert? I don't think I was aware of that.
Yep, every single one. So we've found that people love having that option. Every once in a while, there will be a listener who says, "Oh, I don't want to look two places at once," but they actually learn to disregard it if they wish. But having the option has been welcomed by just about everybody.
Tell me about this particular program. You call it Very Mozart. As I said at the outset, there's two Mozart pieces and then one that's not. How did the one that's not get on there?
Well, it was a combination of instinct and balance. As you know, we try to come up with things that fit aesthetically and that fit the means that at our disposal. Also, I was aware that in the Jupiter Symphony, the 41st, Mozart, of course, at the pinnacle and literally the end of his symphony writing career, unfortunately, introduced a pretty strong Baroque element in the form of that final fugue. So there was a certain, Mozart had become more interested in earlier music in his career, and that's a feature of the symphony. Well, Respighi in the Ancient Airs and Dances is looking backwards to music written in generally for the lute and resetting it for modern string orchestra in this particular set. So there's a kind of a parallel action there, although Mozart was inventing from whole cloth, obviously, in his symphony, whereas Respighi was quoting and then adapting from earlier music.
Well, let's give a listen to one of the movements of this four-movement suite called Ancient Airs and Dances, Set 3. There are three such sets. And this is the Siciliana. It's the third movement, particularly gentle one, played here, actually without conductor, no offense intended, David, by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. This is one of the pieces that Heartland Festival Orchestra will play tomorrow night at their concert at Five Points, Washington at 7:30. That was a third movement of Respighi's Set 3 of Ancient Airs and Dances, as played by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. David Commande will conduct the Heartland Festival Orchestra in a performance of the complete suite tomorrow night at Five Points, Washington. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. The rest of the program is music by Mozart, and you mentioned the Jupiter Symphony, which is his symphony number 41 that closes out the program. In between, you're going to feature a couple of the ensemble's own principals as soloists. Tell me about those folks.
Well, of course, we have a favorite daughter, so to speak, of Champaign-Urbana in Molly McKenzie Madden, who's playing the harp part in the flute and harp concerto. Wonderful player who's been playing harp with us for a few years now, two or three years. She's a marvelous player, and everyone's going to delight in that performance. And she's collaborating with Kimberly Reisinger, who is our principal flutist.
And Kim is on faculty, is it at Illinois State University?
That's right. So, you know, I was ready for a little more Mozart this year and opening and thinking about combinations of instruments. Now, this particular concerto always delights practically every listener. It's not done all that frequently, but it's always welcome. And I've missed it and thought, why not revisit and be able to spotlight two of our stars from the orchestra? And I've been asked recently, well, why is it so lovely? And I think it has a lot to do, obviously, with the sounds of the instruments, but obviously Mozart's masterful setting of these gorgeous and simple and elegant melodies for these instruments, which it so suits them. And harpists will sometimes tell you that it's a rough one to play just because it's got so many, it calls for so many fingers. Mozart was not in the habit of writing for harp. In fact, he did not write any more for the harp after this. And so some people will say that it resembled a piano part, but I feel that it's wonderfully successful on that instrument in this work.
Let's listen to this, a little bit of this. We don't have a lot of time on the rest of the program, unfortunately, or we'd play you the whole thing. Here's some of the final movement. Known as the rondo, suggests the form of the piece. And let's see, our performers here, Irina Grafenauer is the flutist, Maria Graf is the harpist, and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields is led by Sir Neville Mariner. It's from Mozart's Concerto for Flute, Harp, and Orchestra on Live and Local. Thank you. That's the final movement or portion of the final movement from Mozart's Concerto for Flute and Harp, which featured Irena Grafenauer on the flute, Maria Graf on the harp, Sir Neville Mariner leading his Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. And two members of the Heartland Festival Orchestra will be featured as soloists in their performance tomorrow night at 7:30, flutist Kim Reisinger and harpist Molly Madden. My guest is David Commande, who does conduct the orchestra. He's the music director. He devises the programs. And any particular reason, David, why of the 41 symphonies of Mozart you decided on the last for this particular concert?
Well, it was time. It's the simplest answer. There's such a wealth of choices in the great symphonies, and I did want to anchor this program with one of the major symphonies, and it's been and one of the late symphonies, which tend to have a certain kind of weight, and the other late ones, of course, have different kinds of qualities. This one happens to be paired with the C major flute and harp concerto, and that is its key. But I also think that it brings something special that every once in a while needs to be visited. The sobriquet Jupiter so suits it in terms of its weight and its power and its importance. And I was very happy on the auspicious occasion of opening our fifth season to give it that special something in this opening program.
Well, and here is how the piece begins. First movement of the last symphony of Mozart. We'll hear it played by the Prague Chamber Orchestra, led by Sir Charles McCarris. David, best of luck with your opening, and of course for the whole season. I'm sure we'll be talking more as the season progresses.
Thank you, Kevin. I'll look forward to next time.
Heartland Festival Orchestra plays tomorrow night at Five Points, Washington at 7:30. For more information, go to heartlandfestivalorchestra.org. The opening movement of Mozart's 41st symphony in a performance by the Prague Chamber Orchestra, led by Sir Charles McCarris. The complete work will be played by the Heartland Festival Orchestra, conducted by David Commande, tomorrow night at 7:30 at Five Points, Washington, Illinois. Here are a few other events you can see and hear live this weekend. The traditional Music and Bluegrass Festival at Lincoln's new Salem Historic Site in Petersburg starts at 6:30 tonight and continues on Saturday as well. University of Illinois Concert Jazz Band plays a swing program at Allerton Park in Monticello. That starts at 6 o'clock this evening. The Don Smith Band is at Hickory Point Golf Course in Decatur. They play swing, apparently. That's at 6 o'clock tonight. The Millikan University Jazz Faculty and MU Arts students are at Madden Arts Center in Decatur. That actually starts in just a couple of minutes. Don't Ask play klezmer music at Bouvons in Urbana this evening at 6. Katie Flynn is there at 9 o'clock tonight. It's the Bement Country Opry Band featuring Eric Gordon tonight at 8 o'clock at the Bement Country Opry Building. It's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, put on by Red Mask Players Children's Theater at Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville tonight at 7, also tomorrow at 7, and Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. On Saturday, Del Sur plays at the Iron Post in Urbana at 6 o'clock. Victor and Penny are at Sleepy Creek Vineyards in Fairmount at 8 o'clock. The New Orleans Jazz Machine is at Bouvons in Urbana at 6 o'clock. Diversity play jazz at Lock, Stock, and Barrel in Decatur Saturday at 5:30. The Kilbourne Alley Blues Band is at Shady Nook Pub in Bloomington Saturday at 9 o'clock. And it's Doc Ashton and the Root Canals playing jazz and blues at Chrisman Park in Rossville Saturday night at 6 o'clock. We have support for today's broadcast from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Season tickets for the 2013-2014 season with music director Alistair Willis are now available by phone at 866-401-7222 or online at ilsymphony.org. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It's 5 o'clock.